Now, the irony here is that we've been having all kinds of weird computer things going on this morning, and that just happens to coincide with a day when we're talking about When Maths Goes Wrong, a brilliant book with title definitely of the year, Humble Pie, and Matt Parker, its author, joins us now. Good morning to you, Matt.
Oh, Bill, it's great to be here.
A brilliant title, and I actually love your title, A Professional Mathematician and Part-Time Stand-Up Comic. You, I guess you've got to be, really, to get into maths.
Yeah, and that's so true. And, you know, a lot of people remember if they had a math teacher at school who thought they were very funny and told terrible. I think for some reason jokes and math seem to go hand in hand.
They do. And in fact, my math teacher even had a funny name. He was called Mr. Wiggins, and I could never take him seriously.
I would go with I would use a fake teaching name if I was Mr. Wiggins.
I think you might be right.
Good on them for owning it.
Absolutely. And of course, he had the little beard as well, you know, that this you know, the kind of stereotypical math teacher beard, you know, like a nutty professor kind of thing. Wonderful. But I loved maths at school. I've got to tell you, I ended up doing A-level maths, and it was a subject that I just found fascinating. I think because of the logic of it. I guess if you've got a logical brain, then maths is a good thing.
Yeah, if you've got a kind of logical approach to life, then learning maths can be a bit more straightforward because you're happy with that kind of, you know, thinking and logic. But a lot of people, you know, like, teachers make a big impact. Like, you remember Mr. Wiggins years later, and for some people, if they have a bad teacher or someone who doesn't bring it to life and they just get a bit behind that logic and that thinking, then suddenly they think they hate maths. And I think it's a real shame that some people fall behind at school and then, you know, never reevaluate if they could do maths or not.
Because it's one of those subjects. I mean, I had the same problem with French, in that I wasn't taught French at one of the schools I was at. And then when I moved, I'd kind of missed the first couple of years. So effectively, I'd missed my times tables in maths. And once you've missed your times tables, you're a bit stuffed, really, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. And maths is often just, you know, it's described as being the language which we can use to understand, you know, the universe and science and everything else. And maths very much is kind of a language and a way of looking at life. And if you get a bit behind in maths, like if you get behind in French, it's very difficult to catch up. And so often, because I do a lot of work with teenagers and, you know, high school students, they'll see their peers doing great, and they just go, oh, I guess I'm just someone who's not good at maths. And I'm like, no, you just, if you miss a bit or you get behind, suddenly you get the impression everyone else understands it instantly and you don't. It's just they've already put the hard work in, or they've already mastered that particular topic.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if students and adults get disheartened, then they, you know, they never catch up.
Now, in the book, a lot of this stuff could have been quite serious, but actually a lot of it is very, very funny that you talk about in the book. And this really is When Maths Goes Wrong. And I suppose that the example of this that everybody would be incredibly familiar with would be the mass panic that went around the world in the year 2000.
Yeah, this is it. Because, I mean, you're right, because some math mistakes have huge consequences. So I've tried to be careful to not have loads of, you know, super depressing stories. And Y2K, when the millennium bug hit in the year 2000, it's a great example because it could have gone very wrong, but we were able to fix it. And in fact, it was fixed so well. A lot of people are like, oh, wasn't that like, you know, a false alarm? And no, there was a genuine problem. Programmers were using 2 digits to store the year number, and when that, we say, rolls over, when that, you know, loops around to zero, that would cause systems to have some pretty serious problems. But, you know, amazingly, it was all fixed in time. I was actually very excited. We had the same problem with the way GPS, the global positioning system, data is encoded. The instead of being the number storing years, the number storing weeks rolled over last weekend. Last weekend. I got my GPS device out. We went for a walking holiday, and I waited for the big rollover. And most devices worked fine because, again, people had put fixes in place. A few older ones had issues. I've had a few reports of a train system somewhere. I mean, someone contacted me off the record and said that the train system they worked on had problems with the GPS because of the rollover. And I believe something in New York somewhere, there was an issue as well. But it's not been very, you know, reported on. For the most part, again, it was fixed in time. And so these mistakes are made when people did the original programming, but thankfully, for the most part, we spot them and fix them.
I guess so. I mean, I might be wrong here, but it seems in my logical brain that when we get past the year 9999, we've got the same problem, haven't we?
Exactly. And I raised this point. I'm like, look, we're just kicking that can down the road. Can I roll over it? Why not just make it 5 or 6 digits now? And then, and this is, there's a problem coming up in the year 2038, where the way that computers store time, they count the number of seconds since the beginning of 1970.
Yes.
And it's because the engineers in the 1970s were like, oh, that's going to last, you know, for like,
how
you
know, funny.
68 years from now, we will have fixed that. Well, we haven't fixed it yet. So we're going to run out of space in the year 2038 because people in the 70s were like, oh, that's the distant future. That's someone else's problem.
That's funny. And actually, anyone who's got a Mac computer, occasionally it will throw a wobbler and put the date back to January the 1st, 1970.
Exactly. And that's precisely why, because its internal clock counts the number of seconds from 1970. And so if it's accidentally reset, then it suddenly thinks it's 1970 again. And you'll see if you sort your files or photos or something on your computer by date, and you look at the oldest, you'll see a bunch of them which claim to be from the beginning of 1970.
They
That's
do.
The same problem.
They do. They absolutely do. If it were only possible, I'm afraid, to make it that easy to go back to 1970 in real life, Matt, I'd be pushing the button right now as we speak, I can tell you. Now, anyone who's ever looked at the program Excel or any spreadsheet at all will know that, you know, it just is a kind of, it's kind of a strict mistress. And if you put something wrong, it just looks at you like you're stupid and nothing works. And there's been some catastrophes with spreadsheets, haven't there?
Yeah, and the trouble with a spreadsheet is if you make one mistake, because a different cell, you can point it at another one, like take the answer from this cell and then do this. These mistakes just propagate, and there's a group called the European Spreadsheet Risk Interest Group, and they do research into things that go wrong in spreadsheets, and it's lovely. And what they do is they wait for there to be a big public release of spreadsheets, because there might be a court case or there might be a leak or there's some way that an organization's database gets released. And they analyze the spreadsheets to see how many mistakes there were. And they have estimated, well, from the ones they've seen, 24% of spreadsheets which do a calculation have a math mistake in them. So it's 1 in 4 spreadsheets doing math has a mistake. If you factor in all mistakes, it's like 90%. And my favorite example are you get people doing, if you do like biological research and you're using a spreadsheet to track the kind of data that's coming in for different genes, some genes have names like, you know, SEP15 or MAR5.
Right.
And they're short for a longer name in, you know, biology, but they look a bit like a date. And Excel goes, oh, that's interesting. And it will auto-format the name of the gene into a date. And that fundamentally changes the data. Like, suddenly it becomes, like, you know, 04/04. Like, it turns it into, like, a date format.
How
and about
funny.
19% of biology research, which was analyzed by some researchers in Melbourne, had an autocorrect mistake in the data. And that's because people are using Excel, which is a great spreadsheet package, to do like databasing and, you know, data analysis. And these mistakes slip in so easily.
Wow. And another great one, which is not dissimilar, is that if you're called Null, N-U-L-L, as a surname, the computer gets confused by that as well.
Yeah, it's so good. So in a database, you'd use null means no data. So instead of putting zero, because zero is still a number, right?
Yep.
You have a null value, nothing here. And I was talking to someone who worked at Sun Microsystems in the mid-90s in San Francisco, and they had a new employee called Steve Null. So his surname was Null. And every time they put him in the database just deleted him. And they don't know where he keeps going. And they just keep entering his details and he keeps being deleted. And for the most part now, modern systems can deal with that because you can store, we would call it a string in computer science, where you just store the letters, N-U-L-L, and it's not the same as the null value.
Right.
But the problem now is a bit more human-driven. People with names like Jeff Sample or Brian Test, people see these names and go, oh, so that must be test data or fake data.
Oh.
And there was someone called Avery Blank.
Oh, brilliant.
And she was applying for internships, which is a college in the US, and she had to ring them up and say, no, I'm a real person, because they'd get the form and, like, surname, Blank. And they're like, well,
oh,
I can't be
that's superb. Poor woman.
So good.
Poor woman.
Yeah.
You strike me as somebody very like me that gets irritated by really small things. And a great story that you are particularly irritated by is about how a football is made up.
It's so true. Now, obviously, I'm a little upset you called it a small thing. I think it's really if you get the classic football, if you look at it, the original one from the 70s, and you look at the shapes, it's made of, like, light, normally white panels, which are hexagons. There's 20 of those. And then there's dark black pentagons. And that's the classic football everyone knows.
Yeah.
And it's the football that's often used in signage to indicate a football.
Yeah.
And so in the UK, street signs for a football stadium have a picture of a football on them. Makes sense.
Hmm.
Except one day I noticed, instead of pentagons, which have five sides, they had drawn them all as hexagons with six sides. And I was like, that's not right. Like, if you get a football and you look at it, it's pentagons, five sides. And then the street signs are like that. So I was a bit outraged because not only is that wrong, I mean, it's just not what a football looks like, but mathematically, you can prove that you cannot make a ball out of all hexagons. Like, even distorted, crazy hexagons, like, if you've got six-sided shapes, you can't join them all together to make a nice, coherent, normal ball, as we would, you know, be able to play sport with.
Yes.
And so I was like, it's impossible. That's the worst kind of rule.
Oh, so funny.
Did you not organise a petition to the UK government this?
I did. You know, the UK government haven't got a lot going on, so I thought, I mean, they're fixing all of the problems, so I think I'll put this in the queue. So I started a parliamentary petition, which you have to apply for. They don't just hand them out. And so my initial application was rejected. And I quote them, they said, they think I'm probably joking.
Oh,
and so
how dare they convince
the UK government. I know, I had to convince them how serious it was. And I had this correspondence with the Parliamentary Petition Committee. And eventually they agreed and they let me have my petition and 20,000 people signed it. And they responded, so I got an official response from the UK government that they're not going to fix the signs.
That's brilliant. If only the referendum had been cancelled on the grounds that they were probably joking.
I think they should use that clause more often.
Definitely. There's some great stories in the book, and this one really appeals to me because I love flying. And this was regarding Pepsi back in 1995, Pepsi Cola, and they had a TV commercial which showed these points that you can collect, and you can normally, like, get yourself a cut glass decanter or something if you collect points.
Yeah.
But in this case, They made an advert with a Harrier jump jet on it. Explain what this is all about.
Yeah, because they were trying to get kids into collecting Pepsi points by drinking Pepsi products. And they had the classic things like you get, like, sunglasses and jackets and things that, you know, kids needed in the 90s. And then to end the commercial, they want to have some zany, crazy thing. And so you're right, they had the Harrier 2 jump jet, which is like the big US military jet, the one that can land like vertically, like it descends, like the engines move. It's absolutely incredible. Huge bit of kit, incredibly expensive. And the joke was, if you collected 7 million Pepsi points, you could get one of these.
Okay.
The problem is, you could buy Pepsi points. You had to get a couple from, you had to get at least, I think it was about 12 from Pepsi products.
Right.
But then the rest of them, you could buy them for 10 cents each.
Okay.
And so 7 million Pepsi points would cost you $700,000.
Right.
And the Harrier 2 jump jet at the time cost the US military $20 million.
Fantastic.
And so that's a bargain.
Yeah.
I don't know what the resale value is on that kind of aircraft, but I'm sure it's pretty good.
There would be postage and packing, I would guess, on top of that as well.
Oh, well, that's the great thing about the Harrier. It can deliver itself.
So what happened?
Although, that said, so someone did do it. A guy called John Leonard got together the $700,000.
Good
and,
lad.
And, like, put it with his lawyers. And so they cut a check that was fully backed by the cash. He got the points. He did pay $10 postage and handling.
Oh,
so you were right.
Brilliant.
There are always more costs. Sent the whole thing off. And Pepsi wrote back. And they were like, no. And then John's lawyers were like, well, yes, funny story. And it went to court. And so there was this big PepsiCo versus Leonard court case where Pepsi had to argue that the TV commercial was definitely a joke and not like an offer of a contract or anything. And the judge agreed with Pepsi.
Oh.
They ruled that no reasonable person. And they had like expert witnesses who were explaining that there's no practical way to fly a Harrier jet to school, and a school wouldn't provide the parking facilities required.
Well, I think that's not true at all. My school would have been delighted if I'd come to school in a Harrier jump jet. They'd have made space, no problem.
See, exactly, right? And they had, like, military experts. Oh, it was glorious. So eventually they decreed. It was a joke, and they re-released the commercial, but they increased it up to be, you know, 700 million points. So they pushed it out. But what I love about that is when they were writing the ad executives were just like, what's a big number? What's a big number?
Yeah.
7 million? Oh, huge. I can't think of a bigger number than that. Put that on the ad. Right? And no one just did the maths. No one just divided,
that's
like,
funny.
Worked out what that would cost. And the ad wasn't funnier with or without 7 million versus 700 million. And so just a great example. No one bothered to check the numbers. They went there with their intuition. And so often our human intuition doesn't line up with what math tells us.
Wonderful. Well, there are many, many more stories in the book. And anyone who's remotely interested in math will find it just hilarious. Humble Pie, it's called. That's P-I, obviously. A comedy of math errors. Well, you're the man who will be able to tell me, Matt. And every time I get anybody on the show who we're talking about maths in some way or other, can explain to me why I bothered to learn at school the formula for solving a quadratic equation. Have you ever in your life used that formula?
You know, I have, but
no.
So I only for my own personal entertainment. I've never had a practical reason to use it, other than, you know, in my own personal recreational use.
I remember it even now to this day, and I walk around in my head reciting the formula for solving a quadratic equation, and thinking, why did I bother? What's the point of all the grief I went through?
It's great, and what I like about it is there will be people out there who use it like properly for work, like very useful things. And I guess at school we just don't know which students, you know, are going to end up hosting radio shows and which are going to go on to be engineer. So everyone's got to learn it.
Well, the only other night I had to recall somebody said on the telly QED, and I then recalled, yes, I remember that. That was what we put at end of equations when we solved them. That was required to be proven, and I felt very, very chuffed with myself about that. Right.
Although I worry if you start pulling on the thread of when am I going to use this in my adult life, a lot of subjects
that's true.
Don't survive that test.
That's absolutely true. You want to see my woodworking skills. They didn't come to much either. Brilliant. Fantastic book. It's been fantastic to talk to you as well. Sorry to keep you at the beginning there. We were having our own our math errors here at the radio station. Humble Pie, a comedy of math errors by Matt Parker. You can get it on our website, tre.radio. Have a great day, Matt. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Bill.
All the best.